Excuse me, this is the operator. I'd like to inform parties that the conference is now being recorded. If you have any objections, please disconnect. Ma'am, you may begin.
Thank you very much. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone. This is the CII call on the 10th of August. That is the consumer project drafting team. And on the call, we have Cheryl Langdonore, Rosemary Sinclair, Steve Del Bianco, and Olivier Crepin-Leblanc. For staff, we have Margie Milam, Liz Gaster, Brian Peck, Michael Salazar, and myself, Glenda Saint-Gervais. Over to you, Rosemary. And we are trying to get hold of Carlos Ubira, but perhaps he'll join later. And I have no apologies. Has anybody else apologies for the call?
No.
May I ask you to say your name before you speak for transcription purposes? Thank you very much, and over to you, Rosemary.
Thanks, Glenn. So if we've got our proposed agenda, I think we've done our roll call, so we can get on to discussion of the draft letter. I don't know if we've got that in the Adobe Connect room, but I sent the letter to Stefan in the... Let me see if I can pull it up.
Yeah, there it is.
Oh, great.
Mm-hmm.
Got to get back to the Adobe Connect room. Ooh, there we go. Oh, now I've lost the letter, I think. Can other people... Oh, there we go. Yes, so this is the letter that I sent to Stefan.
And Rosemary, before we get into any... problems the letter may have encountered, I wanted to say I thought it was an eminently reasonable letter. It expressed exactly what all of us on this call had talked about. Mm-hmm. And whatever its outcome, thank you for taking the lead on that, because it was exactly what we all needed.
Yeah, yeah.
Thanks for that. And look, I don't really know that there are huge problems with it, although Stefan has sent the letter to the GNSO Council asking people how they feel about the letter being sent to CCMSO and GAC. And the people who have concerns about cross-community working groups have come back and said that whilst that work is underway in GNSO, they are uncomfortable about this letter going out. We've not come to a conclusion about that in GNSO, and I've pointed out to Stefan that a number of other GNSO councillors were engaged in this work. So I've got to go back and just encourage those councillors to let Stefan know that they would support this letter going out. In the meantime, I've had some correspondence from Leslie Cowley at the CCNSO, and I think I sent that to you, Margie. Did I do that? No? But Leslie has, in fact, suggested... she makes two points. She says, firstly, that the CCNSO hasn't done any work on consumer metrics as a group, and that they would likely see that as out of scope for their policy. But she makes the point that individual CCTLDs may well have experience that they're happy to share with us.
Yep.
And that she likes Stefan's suggestion of a knowledge-sharing discussion, and asks that we schedule what she then calls a cross-constituency meeting on the topic in Senegal. Leslie is reacting, I think, to a letter from a couple of months ago when I was trying to encourage CCNSO and GAC to engage in the workshop we had in Singapore. So I was just reaching out to them informally. So we've got funny circumstance of cross-communication going on. And I don't know how to proceed because I know that there are a couple of CCNSOs who may have a contribution to make to our group. They may not want to be part of the ongoing discussion. But, for example, the Nominate folks do an annual survey of, and I'm not sure whether it's consumers or registrants, but they go out and seek feedback on a range of topics. And the outer people also are very mindful of consumer feedback. So perhaps if I stop and just take comments and feedback on where we're up to with this letter. There we are, thanks. Are there any comments from anybody? No, I've got to go. Sorry, I'll go back and see if there are any hands. No. My own thought is that we just proceed with our work. The next step is the motion going to GNSO Council. I think it's the 9th of September that meeting is on.
Rosemary, question?
Sorry, it's on the 8th of September. Yes, 9th of September for you, Rosemary. Sorry.
Thanks, Claire. Yep. Steve?
Thanks, Rosemary. I was reading some of the correspondence from Tim Ruiz and Stefan and trying to understand if the objection is to the process or to the substance of our letter, because I get hints of both. There's some reticence from Counselor Tim, I guess because of process, and Stefan echoed the notion that should this letter indicate that we are launching a cross-community discussion at a time when we haven't figured out the rules? That sounds to me like a completely process-driven concern. And then separately, both Tim and Stefan have said things like, the substance of the letter, shouldn't it go to council before the chair of council sends such a letter? And that sounds like it's a substantive look. And I don't believe there's any way there could be a substantive objection to the letter because you're pretty much quoting from a board resolution and taking an effort to be inclusive and trying to generate an appropriate response. So that would seem to me that the only objection that we're really worried about is a process objection, because this might run in parallel with an ongoing discussion on cross-community working groups. And if all that is a fair reading on things, what is it we expect to happen on the September 8/9 council call? How can we prepare for that and get past the process block to some substantive progress?
Rosemary here. I think your understanding is right. I think that the concern is a process one. Whilst Jonathan Robinson is leading some work to outline the process relating to cross-constituency working groups, Stefan and Tim are reflecting nervousness that we seem to have another one of these underfoot before we've worked out what the rules are. The difficulty for me with all of that is that and I, of course, am looking at our group as not part of a formal policy development process, which is outlined very clearly in GNSO policy procedures manual. So we're not one of those things. So I don't think all of that applies to us, and therefore I don't think the concerns about cross-constituency working groups applies to us. My other concern is that if we take this position to its extreme, will it mean that if GNSO starts some work, that work would never be open to the community? Because as soon as anyone else joins, we've got something called a cross-constituency something or another, and we don't like those things. So I just see this as an untenable position to be taking. And in answer to your question, what we do ahead of the council meeting is I think that members of this group need to reach out to their relevant councillors and make those points. And I'll be going back to Stefan to make those points.
I'll make sure that John Berard and Zahid, the business constituents, here with us. I know John's really involved in this project, and John Berard's one who doesn't have a lot of patience for bureaucracy,
yeah,
as you probably know. So it's frustrating that we can't proceed. Because remember that when the board resolution asked for advice, they didn't insist upon advice from all four groups together.
No.
And it didn't insist on it from all four groups separately and independently. It just named all four groups, leaving it to us to decide if we want to come back with a single piece of advice,
yes,
start down a single path and have individual approvals, or just do four completely independent processes.
Yep.
And I'd be shocked if council would get in the way of continued progress on this. But then again, I've been shocked by council before. Maybe. Who do you think? I mean, should I talk to Tim Ruiz? Should we have personal outreach to try to get some indulgence from Tim?
Sure. We can do that. And I certainly will be doing that. But I don't see that all that noise should stop our discussions proceeding.
I see your point.
It's really just not common sense in terms of what ICANN is. ICANN's supposed to be an open community, bottom up. You know, if a group of people come together and talk about an idea, you know, the whole philosophy of dialogue at ICANN is supposed to support this very approach. So my suggestion is that we just proceed.
Okay.
And
worst case, if we proceed and we never get the blessing from GNSO, then who knows? Then Cheryl takes what she wants from this discussion and carries it into ALAC. We take what we can from this joint work and we carry it into GNSO. And maybe it'll end up that the ALAC and GNSO advice to the board will end up looking a lot alike.
It may well be. For me, I don't see any reason why the work should not be made available publicly somewhere,
Agreed.
So that other people, GAC and CCNSO and anybody else who wants to have a look at it. So it's probably a heresy, Steve, but I just don't think that we should let all that process stuff get in the way of our discussion about what is an incredibly important topic. And I suppose my own concern with that emphasis on process means that the incredibly important work that ICANN needs to do to demonstrate to a whole bunch of people that it really seriously takes account of consumer interest, consumer trust, choice, public interest, those words that are littered through the affirmation of commitments, ICANN needs to really walk the talk on that, those matters. And this is the one piece of work, I believe, that is doing that. So it's very important that it continue, even if other people aren't on side about the process at the moment. Are there any views from the staff people on the call about all of this?
Margie Rosemary. No, I agree with your assessment as to the current state of affairs with the council. So, I don't disagree with anything you said.
Rosemary, okay. Cheryl here. I've got my hand sticking up.
Oh, sorry, Cheryl. I can't see that. Sorry about that.
There might be some limitations in the
mobile.
Possibly because you're only a participant. And so the hosts will be getting the notices, not you. Maybe you need to be upgraded to a presenter, if not a host. And then you'd see things like hands waving at you flash across your screen. Okay, Cheryl Langdon-Orfer, a transcript record. Just wanted to sort of allay some of the fear that, well, the concern, not fear, the part of what Rosemary said, because from my absolutely biased and, I suppose, bloody-minded perspective, and I guess some of you are used to that from me, whilst the new GNSA working group model remains open to participants, we who are keen on the ICANN multi-stakeholder model actually working in a bottom-up consensus-driven way, we'll do our very best, and I suspect Olivia may echo me here in a moment, to ensure that silos do not operate in silos where they are best not operating in silos, and something as important as this matter clearly is in that space. Steve, to your point, I would be delighted to think that there may be a great deal of similarity between what the outcomes are from any several contributions, let alone any other joint contributions on this topic. That is one of the benefits of having people littering each other's work groups, and that's why I think it's a very good thing that the current GNSA work group model allows exactly that. So I'm all for the let's get on with the job and keep on keeping on. And that said, as my declaration to what I would consider friends and colleagues in this work group from the wonderful world of GNSO, note I did say GNSO, not GNSO Council, it's my intention, should I be deemed appropriate as I move to the end of my term of office in the ALAC at the Dakar meeting, to make an application to join the non-commercial stakeholders group as an individual member. So I trust some of you will not find that a maladaptive or unwelcome move, but we need to get this right, and hopefully I might be able to contribute. Okay, that's it from me. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Cheryl. Are there any other comments on this matter of process?
Rosemary, it's Olivier.
Yes, Olivier.
Thank you, Rosemary. Olivier Crépin-Leblanc for the transcript record. I just wanted to echo your sentiments, Rosemary, with regards to the process issues, and to also echo what Cheryl has just said with regards to the ALAC. As we have found in the past, working in silos has been very detrimental to the way that ICANN as a whole has worked. And we will do our utmost best to break those silos down one way or other. And I'm sorry if that will annoy some people who prefer to work in silos, but we have seen that the only way that we've managed to unblock the situation with regards to the new GTLDs was to break those silos down and for people across the community to talk to each other. And with this specific subject, I think it is a subject that is so important that it will require cross-community work, whether official, whether non-official, whether those links are made through charters or whether it is individuals talking to each other. I think that we need to make sure that everyone is on sync on this. I'm not going to comment on the GNSO Council's decisions or views or discussions. I don't think it's my place to do such a thing. And the only thing I would say, though, is that the community is watching.
Yes.
So that's it. Thank you.
Thank you, Olivier. Okay, with that out of the way, we'll get back to our definitions. And my recollection was that we were going to talk about consumer trust on this call. Yep.
All about trust today.
All about trust. All about trust. I wonder, Marjorie, yes, if you could put up the that very useful table that you've drawn for us. On the definitions. It compares the business constituency with the ones that Wendy Seltzer has put forward. There we go. Yes, with the notes. So could we go to the section on consumer trust?
Rosemary's Margie is at Consumer Trust, I think is on page 2, and I've set it so that you guys can scroll through the document yourself.
Thanks, Margie.
Flip the documents.
Right, except if you're using your iPad.
You've got to use your finger.
Yes. Oh, maybe I use this arrow. No. Oh, yes. There we go. Sorry about that, everybody.
Be kind to our leader. She's using new technology.
That's right. And now that I can see this, I can't see anything else. Never mind. Okay, Steve, I wonder if you could take us through your definition of consumer trust, and then we can compare that with Wendy's and get our discussion going.
Right above there is the definition of consumer, and I wanted to note that when the BC put it in, we didn't think the consumer was just internet user, but also a registrant, a domain name registrant.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so there's two kinds. So there's non-contract parties who register domain names, and then there's people that use the internet. So the definition of trust that the BC put forward was the perceived integrity of domain name registration, such that users have confidence that a domain name is held to the advertised purpose and standards of the TLD operator, of ICANN, and of relevant law. And the key to that is that certain TLDs are being proposed with a value proposition to the community about how they will differentiate or how they will specifically restrict who can get a domain name, how they might actually police the space in a way to deliver value to registrants and then to users. So the degree to which applicants live up to those promises will be a large measure of whether consumers can perceive that they trust that. So that if .bank is a new GTLD and .bank is trying to solve a lot of the problems we have with fraud and phishing on online banking, then consumer trust would be the measure that within a few months of its launch, do people trust visiting their domain name .bank more than they used to trust bankname.com? That would be a huge success. I know it's not quite innovation, but it would be a huge success for the new GDLD program if we were able to deliver something like that. Thank you.
Okay. Are there any comments from anyone? Let me see.
Olivia here. May I ask a question?
Yes, Olivia.
Thank you, Rosemary Olivier, for the transcript. Steve, you mentioned here the confidence that a domain name is held to the advertised purpose and standards of the TLD operator, ICANN, and relevant law. Does this take into account the possibility of the purpose and standards of the TLD operator, ICANN, and relevant law being different? Or is that, does it really not matter? And I'm not a lawyer, so that's why I'm asking you the question, if you do know.
Yeah, what if they are different? That's a great question, Olivier. I suppose that if .bank had certain standards that it couldn't enforce in a given country, well, then the relevant law of that country would clash with the contract that the .bank operator had signed with ICANN. So there will be conflicts like that. And I think we should just have to realize that sometimes there will be. We can't always ensure that a contract between ICANN and an operator will always be applicable in every single regime. And if it were the case, Olivier, don't you think we can still seek to measure whether registrants and users perceive that there's a greater amount of integrity than there was before this contract came into place? I hate to just compare a .bank to the bank.com example. I wish I could come up with a more compelling example. And a lot of it depends on how many new TLD applicants are going to say that we're special purpose. If the .bike TLD is really all about legitimate bicycle sellers and will do their best to make sure no counterfeit equipment is sold on .bike, that'd be a value proposition that I, as a bicycle lover, I would welcome that. Because when I look at bicycle parts in the search engine and see a lot of websites, I have no idea about getting authentic parts. So that isn't that an example of getting to the example of trust? And maybe examples will tell the tale more than just the prose that shows up in a definition.
Yeah, no, it sounds fine. Sounds fine. Thanks.
Cheryl here, Rosemary.
Yes, Cheryl.
Thank you. Again, Cheryl Langdon for the transcript record. 100% behind you on this, Steve. And I think this is also where we're probably going to end up drawing one of those incredibly predictable circle, touching circle, overlapping somewhere with yet another circle diagrams at some point in our not too distant future. Because, of course, the ability for this measurement, which I think is a very worthy pursuit, and we should try and do it, or suggest it be done, does depend on the choices that our consumers, and I again also agree with consumers being inclusive of registrants here, being made based on accurate information, and where, for example, in the example you just gave, should there be a variance between the standards of, the barrel of apples versus the barrel of oranges that we're trying to compare, then one of the critical control points for a decision maker, let alone a metrics measurer, would be how well does the audience who's making their decision between these two choices understand what those choices mean. So I think this sort of wider definition and set of measures is an excellent way forward. And what I'm a little concerned about, I suppose, is how we capture it in a predictable and planned way pre and post new GTLDs going into the route. Thank you.
May I add something, Rosemary?
Steve, yes.
Yeah, given that ICANN does what it does as a regulator through contracts, policy and contracts, we tried to work into this definition. When we say the words that it's held to the advertised purpose and standards, that's really all about ICANN enforcing the registry contract in cases where the registry contract promised to be, I want to use the word restrictive, but selective, promised to be selective about registrants that are permitted in the second level. And some of these may go further to say that they're going to deliver certain benefits to the community that would use that TLD. And when we read their contracts and proposals, we're going to see benefits that have to do with the word consumer trust. And when we do, we would turn around a year later, because that's when this will be conducted, we would turn around a year later and ask ICANN, do the operators of .bike and .bank, have they been living up to this? Show us the evidence of compliance. And maybe we also commission a survey, pretending the five or six of us are all on the review team, the affirmation review team, 1 year after the domain names are up. We might spend some of ICANN's money on a survey, consumer survey, assessing whether registrants and end users do perceive more trust. And we'd have evidence to go back and say, looks like this new GTLD did generate higher levels of trust by the virtue of certain contracts, advertised purpose and standards that were being upheld by the operators. That would be a success story to tell. Wendy's definition, on the other hand, considers trust to be only trust in stability and consistency. This is the one that she has, the 3.2. And that is not untrue. I mean, consumers do trust, well, they rely upon ICANN to ensure the stability and consistency of the domain name resolution, and that's true. But that is not what trust is about. I believe trust is a level higher than that. And when they wrote the affirmation of commitments, the word consumer trust gets in there because of the concern over fraud, deception that occurs on the Internet. I'm not my alone in that thought?
No. No, I don't think you're alone. But I think there is an interesting discussion about what role ICANN has in dealing with the possibility of fraud and what role ICANN has in mitigating those possibilities.
Hang on, Rosemary. Cheryl here. I'm a little less worried about that because there are fora which in the wider internet ecosystem ICANN can validly current strategic planning have a role to play. But that's actually different to its requirement to measure the effect on these issues pre and post new GTLD round.
Now, where I was going with that is that I like the way Steve is framing this discussion around the registry contract and the TLD operators' commitments, statements to their customers. And when I say, well, it seems to me that those things are very much within ICANN's purview. If I go, say, to the very broad discussion about spam reducing confidence in the internet, and I start thinking, okay, well, what can ICANN do about that? That's when I think I'm in a different ballpark, and probably a ballpark that's too hard. I'm not trying to talk us out of any responsibility, Cheryl, for consumer trust in the way you've described. I'm only just thinking, okay, what are the tools that ICANN has got to play with in making a contribution to increased levels of trust? And I'm also very mindful, as Steve keeps reminding us, that this whole work is in the context of the new GTLDs and the concerns that were around about those. And that seems to me to frame our discussion. The other point that I wanted to just raise is about this relevant law. And I wonder whether that is just going to make the discussion very difficult in the way that the REC6 discussion became very difficult when we were trying to figure out those principles of public morality and so on with reference to international legal treaties. So did perhaps, Steve, if I can just tease out what you were really thinking about with relevant law, is it, well, when I read it, I thought, well, that could be in Australia. For example, there's a competition and consumer legislation, and in there is our provisions about false and misleading advertising.
Yeah.
And I was just thinking, well, is that the sort of thing that you're meaning?
Here's where that came in. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Okay. Yes, I can.
And Philip Shepherd did a lot of the work on this. There's enforcing of contracts, which you've discussed, and then there's measuring of perceived amount of trust.
Yeah.
And the relevant law comes in that, is there a perceived, is there a measurement we can do as to the number of violations of applicable law that occur in domains in a new TLD versus domains in an old TLD? So that is a statistical compilation of number of violations of UDRP, URS proceedings that are happening in a new TLD versus an old, .bank versus .com, .bike versus .com. It might be the number of times we see violations of law for fraud, because UDRP and URS are something different. But what about fraud and criminal behavior?
Mm-hmm.
A violation of their contract by virtue of selling a name to somebody who was not entitled to have it, well, that's not a crime. That's just a contract violation.
Yeah.
So there's three categories of violations: contracts, applicable law, relevant law, and ICANN's own proceedings like UDRP and URS.
Right.
And I don't want to excuse ICANN from doing things about fraud, because the registration of use policies, or the RAP, does have certain measures that we will end up recommending that contract parties have to take care of. And, of course, if the contract party is responsible, ICANN is responsible for enforcing the contract with the contract party. So it's still going to come down to two things. Has ICANN been enforcing the contracts that it has? And the policies. Let's say enforcing contracts and policies. We ought to put it that way, so it's broader.
Yes.
That way it'll, it'll encompass the RAP work. So enforcing contracts and policies and measuring the perceived trust on behalf of registrants and end users. A lot of banks are going to pick up shop and re-register in .bank, and 1 year later, it'll be critical to see whether they're pleased with the process. Are they happier now? Do they see less fraud? Are their consumers more trusting? Mm. And if not, everybody's going to say, why did we do this? Because we're spending a lot of money on defensive registration.
Yeah.
We've turned ICANN upside down, and some of the benefits we promised in the way of consumer trust are still not being delivered. That doesn't mean you unwind everything and start over. No, it just means that we come out, the review team comes out with recommendations that says that there's a whole element of enforcement that ICANN's not doing.
Mm-hmm.
And we ask them to step it up. Thank you.
Good. Okay. Any other comments on that? And I'm sorry, but I can't see hands up. So if there are, if people would just speak up.
Rosemary, it's Olivier.
Yes, Olivier.
Thank you, Rosemary. Olivier Crépin-Leblanc for the transcript. I was going to just say that the early part of, well, specifically the early part of what Steve has spoken about, the measuring of the trust in the new GTLDs compared to the existing GTLDs and all of the associated possible measurements or metrics is something which is absolute music to my ears. And I suppose it probably would be music to the ears of quite a few internet users out there. It's something which there isn't much of at the moment, and it certainly is something which I think you should be aware, Steve, and you probably are, there might be considerable opposition too in some corners of ICANN. That said, it's something which needs to be done. So, I think we're all in sync. Thank you.
May I ask Michael Salazar, if you're on a voice call too, I'd really love to hear more of your thoughts about the challenges we'll face educating people, picking up on what Olivier just said, that we could end up encountering confusion. But Olivier says even opposition, if we were to advance the definition of consumer trust that implied that the new GTLDs have to actually deliver a better amount of perceived trust than the existing.
Yeah, so I'm not sure. This is Michael. Oh, sorry, I'm not sure how to necessarily answer that. I think part of I've got a very narrow view of the education here. But in some of the chat that we have going on, Wendy's definition seems reasonable. Although I get what you're saying. My thought was to combine the two. Cheryl made a good point about. End users or internet users are always going to be a challenge, but I thought if we narrowed that down to who would we want to educate on what we're saying consumer trust is? Is it what organizations really are going to be paying attention to this? Because it's not the everyday internet user, but it is certainly governments and other organizations who are going to be paying attention to this, and the definition needs to be put in a way that they'll understand what we're trying to achieve and to some extent what ICANN is doing.
Well, it'll be music to their ears, to use Olivier's phrase. It'll be music to government's ears if we talk about enforcing contracts and policies.
Hell yeah.
And if we talk about measuring the actual incidence of fraud, violations of URS and UDRP, and contract breaches. That'll be music to the ears of governance. I realize that the contract parties might not like it very much, but I think that this is all about determining whether ICANN contracts can deliver value to the global public interest, not just to the contract parties.
Yeah, so I don't disagree with that. I'm wondering what kind of challenges we'll have with that, but I think the first part is let's get to the definition.
Rosemary here, and it's important to just remember that board resolution asks for work on the definition and the measures and the methodology, and then talks about goals over 3 years. And it strikes me that when we get to the methodology, that's where we ought to have a discussion about ICANN's contracts and policies and compliance procedures and if you like, the range of tools that are available to ascertain whether people are doing what they're supposed to be doing. And then it might be useful if we just capture the range of responses available to ICANN in cases where people aren't doing what they're supposed to be doing, without getting too much further down that path, really. It's just if we can put all this in one place for consumers to feel confident and that they have choice and so on and so forth, these are the things to look for. The measures of those things are, you know, numbers of applications or numbers of complaints or whatever they are. And then ICANN's response toolkit, if you like, is contracts, policies, the ombudsman, etc., etc. So if we could somehow just capture that big picture, then I think a number of things that we've been mentioning today actually come together in a really sensible approach from an ICANN point of view to ensuring that we've got choice, competition and consumer trust measurable a year after the introduction of the new GTLDs.
May I, all of Olivier's hand up, I'll wait.
You could jump in.
Steve? I'm sorry, I just can't see the hand. So was it Steve wanting to speak next? And then
Olivier was up first.
Okay, thank you. Olivier?
Thank you, Steve. Thank you, Rosemary. Olivier here. I was just going to mention reading Wendy's definition of consumer trust. It strikes me as being something of a purely technical nature. The stability and consistency of domain name resolution is already something that is going to be tackled by the DSSA, the DNS Stability and Security Analysis Working Group. And I just wonder whether we're not doing double work here. I would say that 3.2, Wendy's definition, is a subset of the BC's definition and a very small subset, that is, since we're just dealing with the technical side. So that's what I had to say. Thank you.
And Olivia, did I understand you to say then that the DNSSAC is actually looking at measures for these technical matters?
The DSSA, Delta Sierra Sierra Alpha, is the DNS Security and Stability Analysis Working Group. And that is a very large working group, actually, that will incorporate some of the major contracted parties out there and DNS operators, and find out if the DNS is and the internet is indeed on the verge of collapse, or whether it is not the case, and how close is it to how stable is it, and how consistent is it with its technical standards.
And just to jump in after metric. Olivia, it is all about metrics. That group is all about measurable.
Measurable. So it might be more suited to deal with what Wendy is describing than the group that we are in at the moment. Thank you.
And I think...
Rosemary, I've got my hand up.
Yes, Steve, go.
Wendy's suggested 3.2 is almost an assumption. It's a given with respect to everything ICANN does, and it's not specifically applicable to the new GTLD program. Now, having said that, if it'll help keep the family together, I'll bet we could easily fold in the words stability and consistency of resolution and fold that into what we're working on in the way of trust. And if Wendy would see kindly towards that, I would wholly embrace that. But I don't want to lose the element of having a chance to have ICANN start to pay attention to trust. And to beef that up, I pasted into the chat from the Affirmation of Commitments. I pasted in there what the review has to look at a year after new GTLDs have been in operation.
Yep.
This is from the Affirmation. It says, ICANN will organize a review to examine the extent to which The expansion of GTLDs has promoted competition, consumer trust, and choice. And it goes on to test some other things, but the first and primary thing that review team has to look at is, wow, a year later, we've expanded GTLDs. How have we, to what extent have we promoted competition, consumer trust, and choice? So it looks to say that what was the state of consumer trust before, and then a year later with all these new TLDs, have we improved the state of consumer trust? And we're trying to measure that in terms of what do people perceive, and it doesn't necessarily take an education of all consumers to Michael's point. We don't have to do an education campaign before the new GTLDs launch, because I believe that is what the GTLD applicants will do in order to attract registrants to buy a name from them and to attract users to type that in. You see, they're going to ones going to be educating people about why .bank is better than bank.com. Now, at the end of that year, we're going to measure, wow, how things turned out, but we're not going to let ICANN as an organization off the hook by just doing a survey. We're going to take a look at ICANN's internal mechanisms to see whether they have been holding the companies to their contracts and enforcing policies, because that's an opportunity to say that consumers may not perceive everything. Sometimes surveys don't give you very reliable and, you know, hard results. It's also necessary to take a look at the contracts themselves and say, have they been following the promises they made when they pitched this new TLD? Thank you.
I think, Rosemary here, I think it's so important to keep going back to what that review request is. And the significance of it, from my point of view, has always been that it's pulling in the element of consumers, consumer trust, consumer choice, into this work of assessing the outcomes of the new GTLDs. So it's saying to us that you can't make that assessment simply using supply-side metrics or technical approaches. You've got to take account of what consumers are thinking. Now, has anybody else got their hand up to make a comment?
Rosemary, Cheryl here. I haven't got my hand up because I figured jumping in seems to be the system that works at the moment. And we might use our hands just for us to sort of form orderly cues when it gets too exciting out here in the edges. this is one of those calls which reminds me why I stay up at midnight, 3 a.m. and get up after all of that for a 6 a.m. meeting. You are all an absolute joy to work with. And what I'm hearing, I'm going to suggest we need to grab some of the words from the transcript of this call and start putting it into a sort of a thumbnail sketch of the very, very beginnings of perhaps some words to go into some outcomes. Because I'm hearing language that I would be happy to hear in a first pass on a draft outcome from a work group right here, right now in this call. So I just would be really keen to make sure we capture so many of the words of wisdom that is being bandied around here, and then obviously get them out to the wider work group participants and the wider GNSO for all the necessary interaction, interrogatories, interventions, and interference that it requires. But
just to that point, Margie, would it be possible for you to do on this topic of consumer trust what you did on competition, which is, as I read it, goes through the transcript and pull out the really important statements or thoughts and capture them in the notes column?
Yes, Rosemary, I actually, now that I've put together this document, it's in a Word doc, in an Excel spreadsheet, I'm taking notes as you guys speak and to try to capture on. So I think what I'll do after this call is distribute it all, and that at least will give others a flavor of what was discussed in a very summary format.
Okay, and then we can put it on our Confluence area, but I'd be happy to, if everybody else is happy about this, We do an update at GNSO Council on progress with pending issues, and I'd be happy to just let people know that that work is available for those who are interested to have a look at it.
Works for me.
Because I also think it's a very important, useful discussion, and we may be able to get some other contributions when people see the kind of approach. But I don't want to do that if others on the group are not happy with me to do that. Okay, well, let's just take the next step and see Margie's work, and then we can just confirm what we want to do with the document. But I very much agree with Cheryl and Steve and Olivia, of course, that I think we're kind of coming out of the fog a bit now and starting. I certainly can see the elements of a framework starting to emerge. And I'm also feeling comfortable about the balance between ICANN land and consumer perception. And they're two different worlds, I think. Now, so Steve,
different worlds, Rosemary. We're the other side of the known universe in a multiverse model.
Cheryl, I'm trying to use inclusive language. back to Steve's point about inclusive, positive language. I think it would be great, Steve, if you could have a go at combining those two definitions, Wendy's and yours. The issue for me is that I see so clearly a distinction between Wendy's set of definitions coming from a supply-side perspective, which Olivia called this out earlier, being very focused on ICANN technical matters, whereas I see the definitions from the business constituency being very usefully from the demand side. What do the consumers think about all of this? But of course, we've got to come up with definitions that work for everybody and then can be measured and managed and so on into the future.
Rosemary, Steve here?
Yes, Steve.
I will take that on. I will happily combine. But I'll do so knowing that I really think Wendy Seltzer's preference would have been to have her limited definition on stability and consistency and resolution instead of a definition that called upon enforcement of contracts or measuring of perceived trust. I don't believe that Wendy, and I hope I'm wrong, but I don't believe Wendy wants the affirmation review to take a look at things that are as expansive. She's very concerned about mission creep with ICANN, as all of us are.
Yes.
As all of us are. So that's why we're trying to couch this in terms of things that ICANN already does. That is, it enforces contracts and policies.
Mm-hmm.
Look at this, folks. If we go out and measure the perceived trust and consumers don't trust .bank and .bike any more than before and the fraud is all up, that doesn't reflect entirely badly on things that ICANN did wrong. It may be that the applicants themselves were banking on defensive registrations to pay the bills. And it may be that there's not a real value proposition in .bike over bicycle.com.
Mm.
And if that turns out to be the case, those business models won't succeed. And we're just going to have to roll the dice and see what happens. But along the way, the affirmation says we're going to measure a year later to see whether we've delivered on trust, consumer choice, and competition.
Mm.
So I will combine the definitions. I'm managing expectations with it. Wendy may not have wanted but instead of. And let me say that consumer trust is the easiest of the definitions, because in my opinion, choice and competition are very close to each other, and it's a challenge to come up with separate set of definitions and metrics for consumer choice and competition because they're so similar. And I think that there's going to be much harder. So we're going to be back in the fuzzy land, Rosemary, pretty soon.
Well,
hey,
we
Steve,
might.
This is Mike. Sorry, I absolutely agree with you. I think competition and consumer choice are very closely aligned, and we're going to struggle with those.
It may well be that that's a place where we do bring some supplier side, simple supply metrics in, like how many are operating, how many different back end. We're not going to run away from that. We won't treat that as sufficient to have measured whether there's competition and choice.
Right.
So some supply side metrics are going to be fine.
Rosemary here. A couple of comments. Firstly, I think your understanding of Wendy's position is quite right, and she was very deliberately framing alternative definitions for us to look at. But my view is that our process is one of discussion and compromise and seeing, you know, what can come from the two perspectives that we can take forward. So I understand what you're saying, Steve, but I still think that the best outcome from our discussions is a combined perspective. And in any case, I think our focus now on the tools that ICANN has to measure and deal with problems and promote improvements provides a useful set of boundaries to this work and our discussion. We can talk very loosely about consumer trust and consumer confidence and all the rest of it, but if at the end of the day we're coming to a point of saying, and ICANN can only deal with this through its contracts and policies, then I think we've got a way of dealing with concerns that we might be opening up an unmanageable discussion. Secondly, on the competition and consumer choice argument, I understand why people think that these things are very, very closely aligned and how can we ever unpack them. But my experience in the telco area would suggest that you don't always get effective, informed consumer choice, even when you've got a number of suppliers in a market. And telco mobile phone contracts are a classic example, where most economists would say that's a very competitive market, but most consumer advocates and behavioural economists would say it's not very effective from a choice point of view because the consumers are deliberately confused and presented with offers and contracts that they can't understand. So when we get to the discussion about consumer choice, I think there's some extremely interesting work in other quarters, one such being the OECD, where they looked very carefully at what an empowered consumer, in other words, a consumer who can make an effective choice, what sorts of tools that consumer needs. So I'm not so worried about us when we get to looking at consumer choice compared to competition. I think we'll find that there are differences, although definitely these are two sides of the one coin of an effective marketplace.
Rosemary, the way you expressed it brings to mind that choice is the availability of lots of potentially different TLDs, because we're only talking about the new TLD program. So new TLDs that offer different value propositions, different selectivity, self-selection, even trust. And the availability of choices doesn't actually care if the same company happens to be running the back-end registry, or even if the same company is the owner of the TLD. So competition, that is to say supplier diversity, might well measure something that choice doesn't even care about. I guess if .bike was run by VeriSign, and VeriSign still runs .com, I have a choice between .bike, which is a completely specialized TLD for bicycles, or I can go to bicycles.com. But it is more choice for me, and I don't really care if the same company runs it.
Mm-hmm.
Earhead.
Yes.
As long as it runs well, Cheryl here, at least as long as it runs well, meets the expectations you have and basically, you know, says what it does on the packet.
Yes. Yes. Okay. Now, are there any other comments that we want to make at the moment about consumer trust? If not, I suggest
Slight move to the, well, side. I won't define left or right because that's valuated, laden. I'm just wondering if in some of the work done in stakeholder inclusion and trust modelling might be interesting for us, not necessarily to use, but just to look at as a resource. I know I've got a checklist lurking about somewhere in some old archive. I might pop that across for putting up on the wiki space as a resource. But I also thought Ofcom, forgive us while Rosemary and I lurk back to telco interface here, I thought Ofcom did something back a few years ago that was a metrics-driven trust analysis, and I can't for the life of me remember whether it was to do with their IPTV or something, but it wasn't purely telco-ish. I just have it fiddling around the back of my head.
Yep.
That might be worthwhile dragging out as well.
Dig that out and have a look, and I'll get the OECD one out, and we can just put those in the resources area of our...
Okay, you'd probably have better access to the Ofcom stuff than I would. I've sort of moved on from that these days.
That's all right. I'll dig around and have a look.
Grazie.
Okay. Anybody else wanting to make a comment?
This is Steve. On the chat, a few of us have been parsing paragraph 9.3 from the affirmation.
Yeah.
And I thought I would try to seek a clarification.
Mm-hmm.
The definitions and metrics for consumer trust, competition, and choice is the first part of 9.3, and those are the only part we're really tackling. I don't really think we're trying to... I don't think the board asked us to go into the second part of 9.3, where we are to evaluate metrics for effectiveness of the application evaluation process, or have we been tasked with defining safeguards to mitigate issues in the introduction? I think we stop our work at the end of the three words, competition, consumer trust, and choice.
Hey, Steve, this is Mike. Yeah, sorry. And I think Cheryl went through and provided a very good explanation of that. So I agree with you. I was just, based on what was posted in chat, I was reading it as using those two areas to measure competition, consumer trust, and consumer choice. And that was incorrect.
So. Good. So we're all on the same page.
Yeah.
Yeah, we are.
Well, you make an interesting...
Rosemary, if I may, having spent a huge amount of time, and I do mean a huge amount of time, with one of the authors of the Affirmation of Commitment, I can assure you that one of the authors of the Affirmation Commitment would have retrospectively perhaps parsed, analysed, and edited a number of the sentences a little bit more carefully.
It is still a remarkable document. I tell you what, as a constitution goes, we should all be so lucky if every organization we had possessed a constitution like that affirmation. I'm really proud of the document. I hope we can keep it alive.
Oh, hell yeah. I still raise my glass to it, but going through the ATRT, you know, I'm sure who I'm referring to would like to adopt it, and I'll prostitute differently.
Yeah, no, I agree. So just let us look. I just want to be absolutely clear on this. I've taken the same position as Cheryl and Steve that what we're doing is assisting. We're preparing for the review that's going to examine the extent to which the introduction or expansion of GTLDs has promoted competition, consumer trust, and consumer choice. Then for me, there's a break, which says that the review team would look at those things, but it would also look at the effectiveness of the application and evaluation process, so retrospectively, and safeguards put in place to mitigate issues involved, in the introduction or expansion. So I've certainly just been focusing on the first half of that, because that's what the board's asked us to do, to work on the measures, the definitions, the measures and methodologies and targets in regard to competition, consumer trust and consumer choice. The resolution doesn't ask us to do anything about the A process or B safeguards. So
that's exactly right.
Yeah.
But I don't want to say that the only reason we do this, we're doing it because the board asked us for advice, but the board asked us for advice because Bruce is interested in not just what will they measure a year out in the affirmation, but if you establish those before the thing begins, then ICANN's management will pay more attention to consumer trust elements that are in a contract. They'll pay more attention on day one of the launch as to contract enforcement. Instead of waiting till a year out, and then somebody says contract enforcement is the way we're going to judge you, and then Michael and his team say, well, why didn't you tell us a year ago?
Yes.
So a lot of the point of doing it ahead of time is so that we can begin to manage towards it. Thank you.
Yes.
Okay. So is there anything more we want to say on consumer trust in this call at the moment? And if not, my suggestion is that we just talk about our next call, which would focus on consumer choice. And
if we could, why don't we make the next call choice and competition together, and finding out how different phrases and terms like supplier diversity fall on one side and consumer choice, what did you call it, empowered consumers, Rosemary, finding a way to get all those phrases, see which side that they fall on. Do they fall on the competition side or do they fall on the choice side? Because I think we have to consider those in parallel. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yep. That's a great suggestion. And I'll happily do some prep work on the OECD and Ofcom and anything else I can come up with that is more on coming at these issues from the perspective of consumer choice, because I think we've got quite a few views on competition. I'm wondering, and this is just a suggestion, whether it would be useful for us to get some external input, and I was thinking, or staff input perhaps, I was thinking of that background work that was done before the whole discussion on vertical integration. And I don't want to get into the discussion about vertical integration, but there was a research paper that talked about competition in the ICANN space, and I thought it was a good paper, raising a whole lot of issues, and then those issues went into the specific topic. But I was just wondering how other people on the call might feel about trying to get some input of that sort in our discussion, or whether we're just happy to go as we are. I don't mind. It was just a thought.
I would ask this before we go, before we raise our profile and raise our head any higher above the foxhole. Let's wait until you know exactly where I'm going.
Good point. Honestly, you can see what a revolutionary I really am.
God, she'd be put against the wall and shot so early. We've got to get this girl trained in covert operations, Steve.
I find my greatest safety is invisibility, high visibility.
Oh, trust me, you've lost that now, Rosemary. There's no going back from where you are now, are there?
No, thanks. The problem, Cheryl, is I don't care.
No, that's the joy.
Oh, dear. Anyway. Now, where are we up to? So we're just going to proceed with our discussions, which is fine. That's fine, and we can come back at a later stage to...
Right, but, and then solicit input from experts, but don't do it in a formal way where we write a letter soliciting anything or ask for budget. Let's just keep it... We're gathering information and insights, and to the extent staff can go find something for us or we can go pull from an OECD, let's keep lobbing it into the workspace.
Yeah, that was certainly what I was thinking, that if we can just ask staff perhaps to have a look at those documents to see whether there's anything relevant in there.
Yeah.
And I'll do that with the OECD and Ofcom work and just bring it back to the group. Informal is good, I think.
Rosemary, it's Margie.
Yes, Margie.
Yeah. On the last call, you'd asked whether we had done any studies that... So I've inquired, and I'm still inquiring, but one of the things that came to mind, and I'll send a link around to it, is in connection with the approval of the new GTLD program, the board resolution, included the rationale, and in there was a specific kind of summary of all the economic analysis that had been done to date. So I'll circulate that link for you guys to look at, but that has a lot of good information about what's been done to date.
That's great.
Margie, a question for you. From your reading of that, that's a great idea. I'm looking forward to that, but tease me a little bit. Does it have things in there about enhancing trust, competition, and choice? Are those words that appear in that document?
I doubt it. I mean, it's more, here's what was done. Here we received a economic, study from this group and from another group, and here, it just kind of lays out. It's more a backgrounder as to what was done that preceded the approval of the new GTLD program, and in it has links to documents. And I haven't done any kind of analysis on that. I've just, it's more of a placeholder to show you where to find those documents, but there's nothing, no added work being done to look to see if there's definitions of competition or consumer trust or innovation.
Even if there's not definitions, if the words are used, it gives us a better hook. Because if the rationale for the new GTLD program relied at least in part on promises that it would bring competition choice and enhance consumer trust, it makes our mission all more important. And I don't know, the affirmation authors, and all of us know who they are, where did they get those three words? Were those three words something they cooked up out of thin air, or were they taken from earlier documents and things like the white paper?
Yeah, I just don't know the answer to that, but I'll keep digging inside to see whether, I have information there.
That would be really helpful, Margie, and you're right, Steve. It's really important that we cover off what has been done before that has got us to this point and not just go hairing off in another direction without taking that into account. In the same way that I think it's really important that we, when we get to our measures and methodology stuff, that we're looking at ICANN tools. So my next question was going to be, after the next call we finish for the time being the work on definitions, my suggestion then is we just take the definitions that we've got at that point and then start the work on measures. Pardon me. And I just wanted to see how other people felt about that approach. It's quite mechanistic. It says... I'm thinking take the three definitions, do that piece of work, and then start doing the measures work, and then get to the methodology work. So it's not rocket science. It's just
so
this
is Mike.
Yes, Mike.
So I'm pretty much a process person. That seems like a good process to me. But I think what we'll find in putting together some of the measures is that it may necessarily cause us to change the definition. Because it's going to be difficult to find some measures that will fit the definition that we've provided. So I think we just need to remain flexible and just anticipate that could happen.
In fact, it's the reason, I think, Mike, for just leaving the definitions where they are now. We've got to see whether they are operational. We can actually do something with them.
Right.
Because at the end of the day, we want to get to better outcomes for consumers. So I, for one, am quite happy if we find that a definition that we're working with at the moment is such that it could never be measured and therefore couldn't be managed, then outcomes couldn't be managed, then we do have to go back to the definition. How do other people feel about that?
I would encourage us on our first pass through the definitions to always be listing examples of the kind of measurements that we believe could be done, so that at least on our first pass, we have a fighting chance of coming up with definitions that can be measured. That is why I know in the BC document, we tried to capture not only definitions, but also the measures that would be in there. Remember I keep mentioning things like the number of UDRP and URS violations, the number of times the contract violated, the number of statistically observed violations of relevant law. Those are the kind of measures, those are metrics. So by keeping them in the conversation, we probably ought to even have them in Wendy's table, as Margie's table, so that we can keep track of it as we go through.
Yeah.
So you're right, we're going to revise at the end, but let's not wait until the September meeting to be the first time any of us have thought about, wow, how are we going to measure this? We should be thinking of it all along.
Yeah. And I think your suggestion about just expanding the table to include measures that we think of as we go through is a good idea, if you wouldn't mind doing that, Margie.
Yeah, that's a great idea. I will go ahead and do that.
Cheryl here, Rosemary, just briefly.
Yep. Thanks, Cheryl. Yep.
Firstly, thank you, Margie, for that link. I've just done a very quick scan of the document. I have not drilled down, as you might imagine in the time we've had the link, into the supporting documentation, but in response to Steve and a very quick pass-through, there is definite focus on competition aspects, on pricing aspects, and on consumer confusability aspects in those studies and reported on in the review document that Margie's linked to. So I'm hopeful that some things may be teased out. I guess we all have some homework.
Mm-hmm. Oh, fabulous. Did you say confusability?
Sure shit did.
Confusability.
Is that the inverse of trust?
I think that must be the inverse of trust.
it sounds like we might need to look at that, mightn't we?
I think we definitely need to put it in the definition.
Hey guys, this is Mike again. So
Mike.
So I'm listening to what Steve is proposing, and you know that sounds right. I also think that we may want to consider who else from ICANN staff potentially should be on this call, and I know that I think there was something posted on chat earlier about having maybe Pam from compliance perhaps attend, but. In terms of consumer trust and Steve, in terms of what, some of the measurements or metrics that you're talking about, some of that may end up falling on Maggie Sirod, who's the new head of compliance, and her team. And so I think it would be good to have them involved in that discussion, mostly from an experience perspective, but also so that they understand and can provide input on what they're capable of achieving.
Yep. I think that would be really helpful, Mike.
Yep.
Mike, I appreciate that as well, although Maggie has her hands full, and if you thought that you and Margie can brief Maggie and come back to us with her thoughts, I'd be grateful for that too. So dragging her onto our calls, I guess that's your option.
Okay. Thanks, guys.
Rosemary here. I guess the other way of doing it is if we is using the chart that Margie's been preparing for us. That, of course, could be made available to a number of ICANN staff as well as other people. And if they had comments or contributions to make, perhaps that's an efficient way of getting their thoughts at this early stage. Although certainly down the track, I think we would want to have focused discussions on compliance and such things with the people who are really managing those processes.
Let me add that before we distribute that document outside of the people on this call, please add, Margie, the context that you and I chatted about at the very top, the context of paragraph 9.3 of the affirmation and Bruce Tonkin's resolution asking for advice. That way, anybody who picks up this document doesn't think that we've just created work for nothing. This is pursuant to a board resolution. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Margie, I got that, Steve, and I've already, as we've been talking, put that language in right at the top. So it'll have the section from the AOC and the board resolution language, and then it'll go into the proposed definitions, and I'll also include that extra column for, proposed possible metrics.
Mm-hmm. And how do we, in between calls, if I wanted to grab that document, Margie, is it going to be in our workspace, or is it something I should just email you and ask for?
I didn't circulate it yet because I literally did it this morning before the call, and I wasn't really sure if this document was going to be helpful. It sounds like it is. So I'll update it after this call, and then I'll post it on our, I'll send it on the list, and I'll also post it on the wiki, so it'll be accessible to all.
Great. Great, because I was, Rosemary here, I was just thinking as we go through, for me, OECD and Ofcom things, if I find, sentences or ideas that are relevant to our discussion, it would be great to just kind of drop them in for other people to have a look at them.
No, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Cheryl here, just briefly back onto the point Michael raised about Maggie. Perhaps, Michael, it would be appropriate for you to approach Maggie and ask if she would like to have someone from her team allocated with a watching brief on our activities rather than us be to come and play in our regular space. I would love to see a briefing from compliance specific to this work group's activities at some point, but it may be advantageous for Maggie to decide that she might want to put someone on having a watching brief to the list and what we do in the wiki, etc.
Mm.
Anyway, yeah, that's obviously your call, but or yours and Rosemary call.
Oh, yeah, no, well, I'm absolutely open to it. That's my whole approach here. The more people in the space, in the discussion, in the conversation, the better. Now, is there anything else we need to do today? Have we got a time set for our next call?
Yes, Margie. I don't believe we have, but...
we don't? There's something in my diary.
If we do 2 weeks, that would put us out at the 24th. How would that work for you guys?
I want to remind everybody that's the .NXT conference in San Francisco. I'll be there. I imagine a number from ICANN will as well. It would be better for me if it were the 23rd, Tuesday.
Okie doke. Let's have a look.
That seems more effective.
I can move it back 24 hours, no problem.
Yeah, I'm okay.
Cheryl, if I may say, it's Olivier here. The 23rd is when we have, 1 hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, four, five, six. We've got 7.5 hours of conference calls already. I'm not quite sure that
God,
we have
that,
the space for
that
one.
That's later in the day, Olivier. This is 7 a.m. versus later in the day.
It depends.
It's 12 hours apart. That'd be a wuss. Stop being a Stop it.
I might give this one a rain check on that day because I usually am fried by the end of that day.
Hang on. Moving it back 24 to the 23rd in the same time slot but 24 hours earlier means this consumer metrics project is about 8 hours before the all night or the all day for you vigil.
It is not, no.
Yes, it is.
Because for me, it's at 2200 on Wednesday, so it would be at 2200 on a Tuesday, but our last call usually ends up at 2000, so...
Ooh.
So we have a couple of hours to have dinner and perhaps some steroids of whatever drug it is to bring us back to life, and then...
Forgive our current chair, for he knew not what he did when he said yes.
Well, perhaps if we can leave our ALAC colleagues to work on their energy levels.
No, that's okay. So fine, let's do it on the 23rd, and I'll try and make it. I might not be too alive at the time, but I'm sure Cheryl will be able to speak.
Yeah.
So that's fine.
Okay, good. So we've got the time and date. Now, does that work for everybody else?
Okay, so this is Glenn. I'm going to send out then another invitation for the 23rd of August.
Yes.
Right. At 20 UTC.
Yes. Yep.
Thank you.
Good. Thanks, Glenn. And at that meeting, we'll look at competition and consumer choice together using Margie's framework, which I just think is extremely helpful to all of this. Now, is there anything else we need to cover off in the meantime? In that case, we will say au revoir. Thank you, everybody.
Thanks, Rosemary.
Thanks, Rosemary, everybody.
Thank you, Rosemary.
Bye-bye. Bye.
Thanks, Rosemary. Thanks, everyone.
Melissa?